and the woman, she was Daphne. By the time I was at the car again, she'd turned and come back from the money machine at the bank. She'd even left her card behind and stood there now with a hand at centre hip. I was halfway into the driver's side and Daphne nodded and knew. She knew near to almost everything, like a woman reading the news. "Matthew Dunbar." She said it, she didn't ask. There I was, 12 hours from home, in a town I'd never set foot in all my 31 years, and they'd all been somehow expecting me. It was a long time we looked at each other then, a few seconds at least, and all was broad and open. People appeared and wandered the street. I said, "What else do you know? Do you know I'm here for the typewriter?" She opened the other eye. She braved the midday sun. Typewriter? Now I'd totally confused her. "What the hell are you talking about?" Almost on cue, an old guy started shouting, asking if it was her bloody card holding up bloody traffic at the bloody bank machine, and she ran back up to retrieve it. Maybe I could have explained that there was an old TW in all this story, back when they used typewriters in doctor's surgeries and secretaries bashed at the keys. Whether or not she was interested, I'll never know. What I do know is that her directions were spot on. Miller Street. A quiet assembly line of small, polite houses, all baking in the heat. I parked the car, I shut the door, and crossed the crispy lawn. It was right about then I regretted not bringing the girl I'd just married, or actually the woman and mother of my two daughters. And of course, the daughters themselves. Those kids, they would have loved this place. They'd have walked and skipped and danced here, all legs and sunny hair. They'd have cartwheeled the lawn shouting, "And don't go looking at our knickers, right?" Some honeymoon. Claudia was at work. The girls were at school. Part of me still liked that, of course. A lot of me liked it a lot. I breathed in and out and knocked. Inside, the house was oven-like. The furniture all was roasted. The pictures just out of the toaster. They had an air conditioner. It was broken. There was tea and scotch fingers and sun clapped hard to the window. There was ample sweat at the table. It dripped from arm to cloth. As for the Murchisons, they were honest, hairy people. They were a blue singlet of a man with great big sideburns like fur coat meat cleavers on his cheeks, and a woman named Raylene. She wore pearl earrings, tight curls, and held a handbag. She was perennially going to the shops, but stayed. From the moment I mentioned the backyard and that something might be buried there, she'd had to hang around. When the tea was done and the biscuits reduced to a nub, I faced the sideburns front on. He spoke to me fair and squarely. "Guess we should get to work." Outside in the long dry yard, I walked left towards the clothesline and a weathered, dying Banksia. I looked back for a moment behind me. The small house, the tin roof. The sun was still all over it, but reclining, leaning west. I dug with shovel and hands, and there it was. "God damn!" the dog. Again, "God damn!" the snake. Both of them nothing but bones. We combed them close and careful. We placed them on the lawn. "Well, I'll be!" The man said it three times, but loudest of all when at last I'd found the old Remington bullet grey. A weapon in the ground, it was wrapped in three rounds of tough plastic, so clear I could see the keys. First the Q and the W, then the midsection of F and G, H and J. For a while I looked at it. I just looked. Those black keys, like monster's teeth, but friendly. Finally I reached in and hauled it out with careful, dirty hands. I filled in all three holes. We took it out of the packaging and watched and crouched to examine it. "A hell of a thing," said Mr. Murchison. The fur coat cleavers were twitching. "It is," I agreed. "It was glorious." "I didn't think this was going to happen when I woke up this morning." He picked it up and